Welcome everyone to today's ILTA pre-recorded roundtable session titled Stop the Robots. Has generative AI eliminated the need for document automation tools? I'm really excited for this topic today, and I have two great panelists with me, Matt Basile and Catherine Bamford. Would you like to introduce yourselves, please? Matt?
Hey, sure. Matt Basile, founder and CEO of Naya Software. Also special counsel at Kelly Dry, not practicing too much now. But I do have 15 years as a practicing lawyer.
And Catherine?
Hi, everyone. Yes, I'm Catherine Bamford. I run BAM Legal. We're a legal technology consultancy. So we help law firms, in-house teams, and new law businesses to kind of improve the delivery of their services using legal technology.
I'm so excited to have you both. It feels like nowadays you can't have a session on legal technology without talking about generative AI. But sometimes the tried and true practices that we've been using for a while are still relevant. And so that's really where I want to drive this conversation today. With so much hype around generative AI, how do you continue to make a case for traditional document automation? Matt, do you want to start?
Yeah, definitely. Having recently had the opportunity to experiment with generative AI and having years of experience with doc automation, I mean, they really feel like two separate kind of pieces of technology. AI, generative AI specifically, is really good at writing, reading, extracting text and concepts. The one thing it's not great at is doing the same thing the same way every time, which I think is really important for traditional doc automation. It really depends on the use cases. But for example, you know, generative AI might be a good use case for pulling together a simple document that you don't have a template for and is kind of bespoke as a starting point. It's also could be good to pull some clauses or starting point language for something you've never drafted before. But for something like automating a set of loan documents or other complex documents that are heavily rooted in, you know, well thought out, vetted language that needs to be the same or consistent every time, I still think doc automation is the way to go. You know, and you're going to run into all kinds of troubles, I think, by trying to apply generative AI and expecting to get a really accurate and well formatted response every time. And so I think they are really two separate pieces of technology.
Catherine, anything to add?
So completely agree with Matt. You know, why on earth would you want your lawyers to prepare something that is going to be different every single time in terms of the risk to your law firm and your insurers? That's definitely not the way to go. But I think one interesting question is, where can Gen AI help with traditional document automation? And like Matt, having worked with document automation for like some 10 years now, rolling it out in lots of different law firms, I've seen the same bottlenecks come up as to where people get stuck. You know, like document automation has been around for years, but it's still not completely widespread everywhere. So what's going wrong? And some of those bottlenecks, there are some people looking at and doing some work around, and we're doing some work around how can it help. So one of the main bottlenecks is getting the subject matter experts, so not the person that actually does the automation, to come up with the questions and do the original markup. Turns out Gen AI can actually do a really good first cut of what are the questions to be asked, say, of your client to prepare those loan documents. So giving them a start for 10 often helps them if they've never done document automation and worked with a legal engineer before, as a really good script to go, oh yeah, these are the type of questions I need to be thinking about. If you've already automated a loan document for, or a corporate SPA or real estate leases for one law firm, it's quite possible that the questions and the logic you're going to use are the same for another law firm. So there is a thought around, could Gen AI actually be good at getting the first template drafted if you feed in previous examples? Now, obviously, we've lots of different types of software, so you've got to get around that. And then another thing that my colleague Peter Duffy is currently working on is, can it help us with the test data and the data sets to test with? So testing is another massive bottleneck. You can't possibly test every possible permutation. But if you feed in the questions, there's maybe something around, well, actually, yeah, we could do a hell of a lot more. Sorry, can I say that? We can do a lot more testing than we did previously to find stuff out. I was speaking just this morning, actually, with the CEO of one document automation software company and asking them what they're doing. And what they're saying is where they're going to be applying their focus is not on the text. And his exact quote was, one of the biggest impacts of Gen AI will be in creating new like better human interfaces for complex software. So, like Microsoft are currently doing with Copilot, you can do some extremely complex stuff using natural language. You don't need to write a single line of code. So some of the more advanced automation software, that's where they're going to be focusing their attention. It's not on creating first drafts of contracts.
Yeah, and I think another really good use for it potentially is checking and like double checking, because it is good at extracting information out and applying a set of rules, or checking some text against some other text and analyzing it. I think that is a good use case for it. I just worry about trying to use it for something where you want it to interpret a really complex concept that really needs to be programmatically coded using traditional doc automation. Because it's not magic. I mean, it seems like magic when you ask it a question, it gives you a pretty really good answer, but it can do things different every time. And doc automation is going to do exactly what you tell it to do.
Yeah, that's the beauty of document automation, right? Is the consistency of the quality of the document, hopefully if it's been vetted and approved. I would add to the bottlenecks, Catherine, getting your subject matter experts to agree on the final language for that beyond the questions. So if Gen AI has a solution for that, I would love to see it. But obviously we're talking to various points, and you've touched on this a little bit with some of the loan document examples, but because it hasn't been as widely adopted as I sort of suspected it would be when I started working with document automation over a decade ago, what would you say is the criteria for a document that is ripe for document automation?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few types of documents that are really good fits. A large set of documents that may be simple, that has a lot of the same information throughout. A large set of documents with a lot of complex optionality in it, obviously, is probably the best use case. I think it's great for one document that has a lot of really complex concepts that, may not be really easy to even go through manually and take out, because there's like linked concepts that if you delete one term, you got to delete five other clauses, and maybe the lawyer didn't mark the template up clearly, so you're kind of guessing. So I think those are really good use cases. And then, anything that's fee sensitive, where doc automation can help, reduce unnecessary legal fees and allow you to take on work that you wouldn't normally have been able to take on without the automation, I think that's really good. And then obviously anything that's high volume, because it's really going to amplify the impact of the doc automation and, allow you to collect more fees, do more work, same amount of resources.
Yeah,
Catherine?
I completely agree. And on, transactional documents are definitely the place to start. Probably every single firm I've worked with, there's always one partner that goes, "Yes, Catherine, I can totally see how document automation is really, really helpful for that department and that department and that department, but my area of law is so bespoke that it could never be used." And then you start talking to them about, "Well, what is it? Can you explain a bit more about, yeah, it's really, really interesting, your area of law. What is it that you do, and what is it you do every day?" And often, there is always some part of that department, some part of that work that they do. So, one example was, I was working with a law firm, and a partner in their California office was working for like very large tech companies, and it was litigation. But through a couple of conversations, realized that they were doing injunctions when someone was stealing their source code. So, and I was like, "Well, what happens when you have to get that injunction in? Because the source code gets out there, and that's really, really sensitive." And they had to prepare 12 documents to get filed at court very urgently. We managed to reduce it from 2 hours to 6 minutes just by him, you know, and his team being able to quickly fill out a questionnaire, because all the same information went all to those things. You know, had another example of client in Dubai that works for a luxury goods company, and it was a similar kind of thing. It was like cease and desist notices when someone found that someone was selling like knockoff goods, duplicates of their goods, you know, online, and same kind of thing, and actually made it automatic by scraping the web of what they were doing and some of the stuff going on there. So there's lots and lots of people that say it can only be used for this and this and this, but actually when you drill down into what they do every day, you find it can be a lot. And one other thing that it's extremely useful for that people don't focus on enough is saving the data to be able to learn more about what you're doing every day. So you know, with if you're doing like mass litigation and you're defending your client, you can, by doing document automation, anything that you do in a digital way, you can save the information that the lawyers are inputting. So one example was a large supermarket that there was one law firm that did all of the employment defense claims against that supermarket. So every time an employee said, you know, I've any kind of employment tribunal claim, so, you know, I've been discriminated against, I've been unfairly dismissed, then the lawyers would prepare, the first document was the defense, and it was like, what have they done? Well, it was discrimination. What type? Age, race, sex. Okay, it was sex discrimination. Where did it originate? A store or a warehouse? Okay, a store. Which store? Glasgow, London, Edinburgh, Manchester, Glasgow. You can turn around to the GC and you can say, did you know that 30% of all your claims are originating from your Glasgow office? Do you have a problem there? And that's when you create that sticky relationship with your client by giving that data back. So there's added benefits to document automation than just the drafting of the document itself.
Yes, you can absolutely leverage that data in different ways if you're doing it often enough for the same client. I think that's brilliant. So obviously, you know, we have to often convince people that their tasks can be automated and that document automation would be good for them, even if it's just a portion, like Catherine said, of their practice or a particular task. In terms of adoption and change management, what have you found is the best way to help professionals overcome that resistance, right? That feeling that, well, that's great for those practice groups, but mine is so different. How do we overcome that resistance to document automation and promote it as an effective strategy for our practices?
I think that there's kind of a lot of tried and trusted ways of creating trust with the lawyers in the documents themselves, whether it's a paper precedent or it's an automated precedent. But I think in terms of the change management of getting them to change the way they work, for me, senior level sponsorship is key. So it has to be promoted from the top down. It's not just something that's passed to a PSL or a knowledge lawyer and some junior lawyers to get on with, and no one really cares about it because it's not cool and it's not sexy. It's definitely the firms I've worked with where the managing partner, the COO, the heads of department for each different practice group have promoted it, and also put the people that have worked on its names in lights. So when, if we're talking loan documents, when that goes live for all the banking team to use, you know, get something in the firm-wide conference that year where you get that junior up on stage to go, this is what we built with the legal engineering team. You know, get it in, if there's you do a client facing automation, make sure that gets in the kind of weekly email digest and name people. By doing that, you'll encourage others to get on board. Another little thing that we do is when we make stuff live, we often try and get people to not hide it in that particular department's intranet page. Do it on a page where everyone can see everyone else's, because that gives them ideas and it actually promotes competition amongst the groups as well.
Yeah, and I think kind of just to piggyback on a couple of those concepts, because I totally agree. You know, just recognizing, especially in law firms, that the kind of structure is a little different than in a corporation. And Someone had a great analogy that law firms are like archipelago, nations, right? Where each island has its own, king or queen. And really starting with the most friendly islands first is great. And even maybe more importantly, starting with, a group of lawyers that has one or two really charismatic, well-respected lawyers that think can then go and kind of tell everyone about all the successful automation that they've implemented. And then I think, the second, third, fourth groups of lawyers are much more trusting because they know that that lawyer was successful in using doc automation. I mean, I think it goes for any kind of rollout of technology or change, but law firms are very difficult to kind of navigate through the politics and convince people to change what they think is a fine way of doing things. And then, we've found what's really helpful is, when you're training new groups of lawyers to do it on real deals. So they don't think they're just spending an hour or 30 minutes learning some new technology. Then they have to like log in a week later and they've forgotten everything. Let them go generate their set of loan documents in 30 minutes or 40 minutes while you teach them all the features, and they can build a time and they've gotten their work done and they don't feel like they've been put out at all. So we found that to be really good because it's very hard to get, kind of on lawyers' calendar, right? And then really just taking away, any tasks from them, wherever possible. So like, don't ask them to come up with the list of fields, look at the documents, figure out, the questions and just hand it to them as kind of like a turnkey solution. Cause we've seen plenty of projects get stalled just because like they don't think they have forms, right? But in reality, you can take some old docs, take five examples of docs, create some forms. They may not be, 95% done. They may be 70% done, but at least you're automating the 70%, and then you chip away and audit what you do going forward. So there's a lot of, a lot of barriers to rolling out new technology, but it can be done, I think.
Yeah,
It's not for
I
everyone. You gotta remember, the hostile, really hostile islands, just forget about them. You may never get them.
yeah, but if you get some of the friendly ones and even some of those that are somewhere in the middle, that will get you far enough, I think. We've sort of hit on this a little bit. I love Catherine's point about, leveraging the data from document automation in different ways. And Matt, you talked about, for those flat fee arrangements and, lower level work where you're trying to make those things more profitable. What are some tangible ways that firms can really measure the ROI, the return on investment of their document automation, both their tools and their efforts?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really tricky one, I think, because like I've gone and tried to analyze this in a number of cases, and the hours don't always necessarily go down just because the whole billable hour construct. I haven't. I think it's tough, but I think one way to do it, which I haven't done yet, and I'm like dying to do it, I may just bite the bullet and do it myself, is sit down, put a camera on me. Draft a set of documents, the old-fashioned way, as painful as that may be, and then keep the camera on me, and I'll do, a set with doc automation, and then you've got, I mean, then you've got a that would prove it out. I mean, it'd probably take 10 or 15 hours to do it right, and obviously you got to figure out a way to motivate the guinea pig to do it in earnest and, try to go as fast as they can on both sets of documents. But I think if you, I think if you did that, you're gonna get a 10x, right, on a lot of these sets, maybe more. So that's one. And then, other real world examples we've seen, we had a real estate lending client that did, 20 loans one year, right? Complex real estate loan document sets. And the following year, after they were set up with doc automation, they did 100 that next year with the same exact team. So I think, that helped them deliver on time, get more work, stay like somewhat sane, so they're not working around the clock. And I remember me personally, even the similar example, right? Where, and this happens all the time to transactionalers, right? You get a deal in, it's you've got three other deals that are killing you at the time, right? And client sends you a new deal, and oh, and I need the documents tomorrow, right? Because it's closing in a week and a half, so there's not enough hours in the day at that point, right? And if you're ready with doc automation, you hit the button, you generate the docs, you know they're pretty good. Maybe you hand them off to someone else to finish, or maybe you prioritize and finish them. You get the job done. Yeah, maybe you would have screwed up the other deals, right? Maybe you wouldn't be able to get it done, and you would have looked bad for missing a deadline. But again, these are all things that you have to kind of be forward thinking of. And some of the ROI is not strict hours and, dollar savings.
I completely agree with that. And Catherine, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on ROI. I know obviously your example of using the data in different ways, right? You don't usually sort of you don't quantify that or calculate that as part of the return on investment of document automation, but it allows you, like you said, to create that stickiness. Even your example, Matt, we talk about and the client sends you another one. Well, are they sending you another one because you're able to push through these so quickly because of your document automation? Are you getting more work as a result? And sometimes there's no direct evidence to make that connection, but it's sort of there lying around. Catherine, what do you think?
It is crude saying how long did it used to take you and how long does it take you now? But in most large law firms that have rolled out document automation, that is what we do at the end of the process. And then you get a monthly report as to how many times a particular template, an automated template, has been used. And circulating that information, making it into nice graphs, as I said, creating that competition. So saying banking saved this many hours and had this many uses, and corporate did this last month, is actually really useful. So it can help with the change management, having the information about how many times something's been used, and then applying a crude but an average figure that, and when I say crude, the lawyers do have a good feel for how long something used to take them, and it's quite easy for them to say how long it takes them now. So, and I think at one law firm, after we'd done about 200 documents, the average was about an 80% time saving for getting to first draft. So, it's not insignificant. But I think nowadays that document automation has been around for a long time, the type of firms I'm talking to, often it's not about the time saving necessarily anymore. It's I'm working with offshore firms at the moment, and there's only really six big offshore firms. Say four of them have it and two of them don't. That's a very niche market that lawyers move around. If the lawyers are used to drafting their legal opinions using automation, suddenly they're working for a firm where they have to go back to the old way. They don't like it, and they'll quickly turn up. So at the moment, associate level retention is a real problem for law firms with associates moving around so much in the market. So happier lawyers is important, and giving them the best tools to do their jobs is really important. Yeah, there's lots of other intangible benefits as well that are key.
Okay, so to wrap this one up, obviously, we've all sort of handled a lot of document automation over the years. Any tips or tricks for helping someone get started with document automation or for helping them ensure that a document automation project is successful?
I think we've touched on, by saying, kind of keys to success and that senior level sponsorship and getting the advocates, as Matt said, go where the appetite is first and get them to advocate for you. But something that we see often is actually around choosing the right software. So it used to be that there was only three main players, and everyone had one of those three. Nowadays, there's hundreds of document automation softwares out there. And when you go into the finer details of all of them, we did a huge exercise a year ago where we took everyone through 75 key requirements. They all do perform quite differently or have different models. So even just the licensing model, how you pay for it. If you're a large law firm and you want every department and every lawyer to use it, you might want an enterprise-wide per user model. If you're an in-house lawyer and you want document automation so that your sales team can automate things themselves, you don't want a per user model. You maybe want a per template model. You might have extreme security requirements that some of the newer softwares on the market, if you're a law firm, just will not satisfy. So you should rule them out straight away. So I think getting expert help to choose the right software in the beginning for your particular use case is really, really key. We've seen a lot of people, you know, one partner has gone to a conference and seen a demo of something and come back and gone, we must get this. And they've got it. And it's turned out not to be the right software for the type of documents they're doing or what they're trying to do in terms of their particular use cases.
I think also just kind of jumping right in once you've selected the software, obviously, and not waiting, you know, till the forms are perfect or you have every single template that you'll ever need, right? Get started, get the core documents done. And as new kind of provisions come up to be coded or new documents come up to be coded, add them in. I view almost every doc automation project as like never finished. So you're always iterating and improving it. So don't wait to get started. And then we kind of talked about this, but like make sure the first project is with the right group of lawyers. I think that's really important. And they need to be able to see the value. And then, you know, just making sure you're always there to answer training questions. Never let a question wait. Lawyers aren't going to wait around to wait for you to get back to them. They're just going to move on to the old way. and then you maybe have lost them. So I don't think there's one right answer for making a project successful, but those are a couple.
Well, I think you've given our audience enough to be dangerous to get started. And I hope that they are reinvigorated with this conversation around document automation, because I think it's a great tool. And as I think we've proven by this conversation, it hasn't been replaced yet by generative AI. So thank you so much, Matt and Catherine, for your time today. And thank you to our audience for listening in.